And I think this could apply very well to, say, a veteran of a war who really wants nothing more than to be able to walk again or to not be burned or to not be injured and can't have that. And in that sense, Le Guin is dealing with very, very mature, powerful, and important themes in Tejano, as much as I don't really like the book. But then she writes The Other Wind, and The Other Wind redeems all the suffering and all the horror of Tejano, because Le Guin has then again reached the beauty that she achieved in The Farthest Shore. The Other Wind deals with the problem Le Guin has set up, which is a land of the dead where people's souls go, where she wants to have it in a reincarnating universe. And not to give away it, because The Other Wind is much more of a mystery than the other books, and I don't want to give away the plot. But essentially, Le Guin is teasing out these implications of where could this land of the dead come from? How could it stop reincarnation? And how could that be changed? She has a set of really appealing characters, beautiful scenes, and they go on a great journey, as is typical, and in the end, they manage to heal the world. I won't say how they do it. The Other Wind is just beautiful from one end to the other, whether it's Le Guin's talking about a character who can use his magic to heal a broken pot and how that's done, or it's even Ged, who's come to accept and be happy with his situation in life, living on a farm, taking care of goats. But it is a beautiful, consoling, happy ending, the sort of thing that she sort of had at the end of The Farthest Shore, but is very much like The Lord of the Rings now, in that they do live happily ever after, even though there are many sacrifices that go into it. So I think that the Earthsea books overall are a great triumph. And Le Guin also wrote some Tales from Earthsea, which is a kind of side stories that go along with those, and those are very well done also. But The Other Wind, she finally manages to bring it to a climax, and she also manages to escape the kind of buried Christianity of her tradition, where the land of the dead and so forth, and bring it into the Buddhism and Taoism that she wanted to with reincarnation, and she gets that to work, finally, after five books. What's so remarkable about Le Guin, again, is how she's willing to follow the logic of the ideas she set in place, even if she doesn't like where it goes, and how she has that kind of anthropologist rigor in describing another culture and figuring out how those cultures would work given the assumptions she'd started with. I now want to move on to Robert Holdstock, and I should admit right off the bat that this is a somewhat unusual choice. A lot of critics of fantasy would put Le Guin in the pantheon with Tolkien. Whether they would put Holdstock there is another question. And in fact, I'm not even dealing with the body of Holdstock's work. I'm just going to focus on two of his books, Mythagogwood and Levandis. But the reason I want to do this is these other works that I've been putting in the pantheon, The Lord of the Rings and Earthsea, are those completely enclosed secondary worlds. They don't touch the primary world. They're not tangent to the primary world in any meaningful sense. Holdstock, on the other hand, is very much about the interaction of the primary world with the secondary world, like C.S. Lewis in Narnia, like Donaldson in The Chronicles of Thomas Covenant, and so forth. But Holdstock manages to get it to work in a really interesting way that actually draws on Tolkien, but is not afraid of him or in anxiety of him.